this is Claire.
And this, It'll Only Hurt
a Little. Today we're going to be talking to Hannah. Hannah has a disorder called endometriosis, which is tissue that normally lines the uterus, grows outside of the uterus. With endometriosis, the tissue can be found on the ovaries, fallopian tubes, or the intestines. Hannah's going to tell us all about her journey with endometriosis, her diagnosis, and how she is coping with it now.
We hope you keep listening.
And we hope you stay alive.
Do you want a squishy cat?
No, I'm okay. Thank you, though. I was like, oh, what? Is that a cocktail or?
No. We're always just like, we need something to do with our hands.
Oh, that's good. I'll just like, I'll tie Gripply onto my own arm.
All right, Hannah. We're so excited to have you here today and be discussing things with you and hearing all about your health journey with endometriosis. So if you want to kind of start at the beginning.
Sure. So I have struggled with endo pretty much since I started my period. I don't think that I knew that at the time, but looking back, I think I've always had it. So the first time I ever noticed I was kind of different was I just started my period way before my friends. And I knew that was kind of weird, but you don't know what you don't know. And I remember specifically describing the horrible pain and telling a friend, it hurts so bad. It's terrible. You know, it's awful. And her mom being like, whoa. That's not normal. Yeah, that's not how it is, you know, for everyone. And maybe thinking I was being dramatic or, you know, trying to scare her because she hadn't started. And
it's fine. We are always bumping the mic, so okay. Don't even worry about
and,
it. And dropping things.
I was just sharing my experience, and I was really just saying how I felt, and that was...
And so that mom thought you were trying to...
I think she maybe thought I was trying to, like, scare my friend or, you know, kind of dramatize it,
instead of saying... If that's how you're really feeling, I think this is something that maybe your mom and you should discuss.
Yeah. Okay. And, or, you know, kind of further asking questions like, well, what does it feel like? Or, you know, maybe describing what a normal period is like and saying, you know, can you tell me more about yours or can you compare yours or something like that? But it was more of just, you know, don't scare her. Like, it's not like that for everybody. And I think that is true, that for some women, having a period once a month is no big deal. For me, it consumes my every month. I have symptoms before, during, and after, and, you know, it repeats every month. And so when I was about 14, I started getting cysts, which are diagnosed from ultrasounds. I knew that the pain was probably from that. That can also affect your period. It can make your ovaries have to twist around the cysts. And it creates a lot of pain. And I think that sort of would have explained my situation. Mm-hmm. Some of those ended up bursting, which is extremely painful, and there's not much that can be done. Finally,
Did you have any surgically removed?
Yeah, so finally I had surgery for the first time in 2009. At that time, I was just feeling horrible. My periods were insane. I was in so much pain. I started throwing up the week of the surgery. It was just really uncomfortable, and I knew something was wrong. I'd had a bunch of other tests, and nothing was showing up. And cysts can come and go. They can fluctuate with your cycles, and so by that time, I'd had them for a long time. They hadn't burst. They hadn't gone away, so it was time to remove them. And so when my surgeon went in, they did find the cysts, they were removed, and my appendix was about to burst.
So, oh my goodness.
Right. So they stopped what they were doing, which I'm very grateful for, went out and asked my mom in the waiting room, you know, can we take out our appendix? It's about to burst. And my mom's like, of course.
Please, can we?
Yeah, right. I know.
Yeah, take it out as soon as you can, please.
I'm not sure of the situation where someone would have said no, but I'm really grateful. Shout out, Mom.
She said yes.
I'm grateful that my mom said yes, but I do remember very clearly all these years later waking up, and I wear contacts, so when you have surgery, you know, they take out your contacts and you have your glasses, and I remember opening my eyes and the nurse looking down at me and saying, your appendectomy went so well.
You're like, you're wrong thing. No. She's like, you did the wrong thing.
No, my ovaries. And prior to that surgery, due to the placement of the cyst, I did have to sign paperwork saying that if the condition of my ovary was poor enough that they could remove it.
Wow.
Which is a big, you know, decision to make. I think I was 19 or 20. And at that time, I didn't care. They could take whatever organ they wanted
for me to feel better. Yeah,
you're in
so much pain. Yeah. Mm-hmm, exactly. And so my first question was, why did I have an appendectomy? And my second question was, do I have my ovary? And she said, you don't have your appendix. You do have your ovary. And, you know, we cleaned everything out. I'm like, great.
Removed some things, but not some
other things. Yeah, it's like a buy one, get one free surgery. So that was great. I, you know, I stopped throwing up. They did find that basically my abdomen was full of fluid from everything rupturing, and that's what was making me throw up. In addition to having, you know, appendicitis, which everything on those tests had come back because my pain is primarily on my right side, and they had done those tests. And
it was fine.
And it was fine. Mm-hmm.
And so why, do they have any idea why all of a sudden?
No idea. So after the surgery, my doctor's like, well, it's probably just your appendicitis and not your cysts. And so I'm like, great, you know, move on with your life. And then 2010, I had my second surgery. And that was the first time I heard the word endometriosis used, and that it was found on my ovaries. It was found all in my, kind of around my uterus and my fallopian tubes. I believe that one. So endometriosis is very sticky, and it can cause your organs to stick together inside of you.
I imagine it's somewhat like scar tissue.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And scar tissue can be very painful. Mm-hmm. And there's leftover scar tissue from my previous surgery, which is painful. The staples and some of the mesh had fallen from removing my appendix and had fallen in my cavity.
Oh my gosh.
So that had been cleaned up. The scar tissue had been cleaned up. The endometriosis had been cleaned up. And the cysts had been cleaned up. So now I'm like, okay, this has to be what it was. You know, there's all these factors and all of that is painful. Now I'm good to go. And in 2011, I had my third surgery. And at that point, it was just endometriosis. I think I probably had some cysts, but
what
the endometriosis
type of
was coming.
Said the word endometriosis, because I doing research, I found that there is no specialist. You think an OB, but they actually oftentimes do not have the information.
And the crazy thing is that you can only find endometriosis through a laparoscopy. And I think it's crazy. You can take a picture with your phone. You can go to the moon. You can, you know, do all these crazy things. We just created a vaccine in, you know, 2 years or whatever.
Yes.
But the only way to find endometriosis is to actually open you up and have a laparoscopy.
A surgery, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to diagnose this is
to
have...
It's so invasive.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, they say, oh, it's just a lap. Like, it's very easy. You know,
they go through your belly button.
Yeah. So I have three holes from each one. So one is for a tool.
Do you have three belly buttons?
No, I'm just kidding. One is for a camera. One is for the tools. And then I think one is they put...
air or something.
It's air, yeah. I want to say carbon dioxide, but I don't think that's correct.
But they do put helium, air. You start rising to the ceiling.
They put air into you to make the cavity larger so that they have, you know, room to move and groove in there. And I don't care what they say, it's not simple.
Sounds invasive.
Yeah, power to the girls who are like, back up and at it. I was not. The first one I took 2 weeks off work. And even that was tough. And as I had more and more surgeries, it took me more and more time to recover. I think my body was mad. And, you know, it's it's surgery every single time.
And it sounds like they're going into more and more parts of your body every single time.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of different types of surgeries. I've had where they do ablations, which is like burning. I'm sure there's a more scientific term. I've had excision where they cut it. I've had all kinds of different ways of removing it. And there's a bunch of different theories and scientific, you know, ideas behind the best way to get rid of it. I don't know. You know, I'm not the doctor. At this point, I probably could have gone to medical school. Yeah.
I think a lot of chronic illness people feel like that. You know, you specialize in your illness and then some because you're trying to find more answers to different symptoms you're having.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I find myself telling the doctors what's up the majority of the time and saying, these are my symptoms. This is what I've Googled. You know, all these doctors are like, well, don't look at, you know, WebMD. It can don't Google it. It can be really scary. It can, you know, make you spiral, but it can also lead you to information that you never would have found because your doctor has never taken the time to do the research and to fill you in about it.
Exactly.
So I'm a big advocate of advocating for yourself. At the end of the day, you are the only one responsible.
And you know your body.
Yeah. You know your body and you have to trust your body. I have gone into 5 surgeries now of not knowing for certain if there's something wrong. I know there's something wrong, but I don't have a test to back it up, right? Mm-hmm. So normally when you go into a surgery, it's like, okay.
There's a reason.
Yeah, you have a report or lab work or whatever it is. I don't. And I have to admit, every time when I wake up, I'm like, well, shit, I kind of hope they found something. Yeah. Otherwise, like, that was pointless. And every time they do, because I know my body. And especially, you know, I've been dealing with this for over 20 years now. And I know when something's wrong. And even if I go to multiple doctors and they say nothing's wrong, I know when something isn't right, when something's not adding up. And I have to fight for myself because there's just no one else will do it for you.
Yeah,
and you have to listen to your gut. And if something is wrong that you can feel, you have to take charge. And that's really unfortunate. And I've lost a lot of faith in the medical community because of that. And I think there are amazing doctors, but I think sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot.
If you find a needle in a haystack, totally finding that person. It was not easy for my mom.
Yeah,
because she was the one doing all the advocating for me because I was in junior high. So she was, like, searching and pressing and trying to find answers for me.
Totally.
Thank God for
the internet. I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm sure you could figure it out, but I'm thinking about trying to look up, you know, like in an encyclopedia or something about symptoms. And
can you imagine?
I can't. And I could see why, you know, women never get the answers. And when I first was diagnosed officially, I asked my mom, I was like grilling her about, you know, like, does it feel like this for you? Do you have these symptoms?
Right, because it runs in.
It can be genetic. And that's the thing about endometriosis, too, is like there's so many theories and there's so many, you know, some say that you're born with it. Some say it's genetic. Some say, you know, it's environmental. And who knows? And honestly, I don't really care how I got it. I just care how I'm going to live with it because it's incurable. And I know Claire's talked about it before where you've never really experienced the grieving
she had to really kind of delve into it and think about
it wasn't like I suddenly, my whole life changed and I had a diagnosis because I had always had a diagnosis.
Yeah.
I've never not been chronically ill.
Where I went 32 years.
Yeah.
Completely able-bodied. But for me, my grief is more that I can't participate in all the things and I can't be the quote-unquote normal 22-year-old that gets to go out and have fun all the time and do all the things.
Definitely.
And I have to work a lot harder and I have to advocate a lot more. It's just a different experience.
For sure. And for me, you know, while I wasn't necessarily born with, you know, or having to deal with this since birth, I've never had a normal period. I've never had a normal, you know, menstruation. I've never...
And you're considerably young when you start your period in general for all women. And so that is a lot of your life.
Yeah.
You just assume that what you experience is what everybody experiences.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's kind of TMI, but like when I was younger, I had really bad clots and these heavy, heavy, heavy periods. And, you know, there's a lot of shame and embarrassment that comes with that, of not knowing what's happening to your body and kind of being embarrassed by that, of, you know, your parents having to come pick you up at school because, you know.
Well, even, like, your TMI right now. Like, there's no TMI here.
That's true. And that's something in itself where, like, I'm like, oh, my God, like, why am I talking about my vagina on the internet? Like, why am I talking about, you know, my period? But it's so normal and, you know, and women have
and
it.
And every woman has a vagina. Yeah. So.
And it helps people. It helps so many people.
For sure. And, you know, I think that if someone, and someone being a doctor, would have, you know, taken the time to kind of help me when I was younger and help my family. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, I kind of grilled my mom on, you know, if she had symptoms. I had asked my grandma, and she had had a hysterectomy very young, which was normal, you know, for her age group. I have no blood siblings, so I had no one there to ask. And, you know, it's kind of weird to call up. I did ask my dad's sister, but it's kind of weird to call up, you know, extended family and be like, hey, tell me about your period. Vagina?
Yeah.
And I think, too, that is why a lot of people, I bet everyone knows a woman with endometriosis, but it's not something you go around. You know, I'm not like, hey, ladies, like, how's your uterus today?
Yeah.
You know, you don't talk about that.
Sometimes I'd like to talk, like, well, it's feeling this way. Back pain.
Full rough today.
Yeah.
And, you know, along with the pain and it, I would say probably for a lot of chronic illnesses, but I can only speak for myself. And with endometriosis, it's physically draining, it's mentally draining, it's emotionally draining, and it's financially draining.
Yeah.
My fifth surgery was in 2013, and I took out a $15,000 personal loan.
Wow.
I found this specialist. He was in the Bay Area, and I traveled there, and he basically was like, it's all out of pocket. Your hospital bills will be covered, but I am not covered by insurance. And in my head, I'm like, well, I must really be good. And to me, it was worth taking out a loan and doing that.
He was great.
I think he was a good doctor. Mm-hmm. I think it's an incurable disease. And you can have the best doctors, you can have the best advocates, you can have the best support. And I'm going to have this for the rest of my life. And I learned a term in therapy, which I think is very helpful for everyone.
We love therapy, yes.
And it's radical acceptance. And radical acceptance is basically you don't have to like it, you don't have to agree with it, but you accept it. And for having a chronic illness, and especially with the infertility that might come along with it, I have finally radically accepted my illness. And that took a really long time.
It's a big step.
It's huge. For a long time, I mourned, you know, that I might not be a mom. That was really important to me. And I felt like my body didn't do what it was supposed to do. And I felt like, you know, I'd failed as a woman. I had failed as a potential partner. And people's first reactions are, well, you can adopt. You know, you can have a surrogate. You can, you know, foster. You can try. And that's all great, but that's not what I want.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if that is a great alternative, and it doesn't matter that there's, you know, a ton of kids that need a loving home. When you are in the midst of it, those things don't help. And I think that is important for people to think about. Is, I know you've also talked about it before, where people will automatically go to, like, well, it could be worse.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be, but it could be a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for me, that's just never been comforting. I'm very grateful for the life that I have. I'm very grateful to be alive. I'm grateful, you know, that I can get up and function. But it fucking sucks to have endometriosis.
Yeah.
And it sucks that, you know, every day I'm in pain. I have no idea what a pain-free life feels like, and I probably never will. I have chosen to go forward and to make the most of the life that I have. But it's not easy. A lot of times it's not fun.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that I love your podcast so much and what, you know, made me want to talk about my vagina on the internet is that I have never found a platform where people can just share their experiences. This mm-hmm. is the first platform that I've experienced where you're not trying to fix me. You're not trying to give me tips. You're not trying to, you're just
no
listening.
No unsolicited
advice. Yeah. No, yeah.
We hate that. We know it well and we don't
it's
like
horrible.
It.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
And even like negative positivity, like, well, but you can adopt and things 100%. Like that. And it's
you're
your
like,
process.
Okay, you don't think I know about that? I do know about that, and
but that is not awful. What as my life I had envisioned.
Totally. Yeah.
And
totally.
It feels like you don't have, is it autonomy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like exactly. you don't have full
yeah.
rights to your body.
And I don't have autonomy over my body, and I don't have control over my body, and I see that manifest in a lot of different ways, and one is that I like to have control.
Yeah, same.
Don't we all?
It's hard to give it up.
I'm in a job where I'm a personal assistant, and I basically control, I think manage would be a nicer word, but I manage mm-hmm. someone else's life. And people are always like, you know, how'd you get into that? Or, you know, why do you want to do that? And I think deep down, I like doing that because I have no control over my own body.
Yeah.
And having the ability to control something is really powerful to me. And it's something that
absolutely.
I don't get to ever experience in my own self. And I think unless you have a chronic illness, you cannot relate to that. I think you can maybe have empathy of how it might feel, but to be able to admit and feel comfortable that you just can't get a grip on your own body, that's another part of the radical acceptance and of just finding peace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that took me a really long time. I spent, I think I said it earlier, but I spent a lot of years mourning what I didn't have. And, you know, it goes back to like, you know, don't mourn what you don't have, like, you know, enjoy what you do have. And that's really easy for someone to say that mm-hmm. doesn't have to worry about what they don't have. And, you know, I don't know the difference. I've always struggled with this as far as, you know, starting when I began menstruation and just always struggling with it. So I don't know what it's like to just have a period once a month and like be good to go and to not have pain. And so I can't mourn what I used to have because I've never had it, but I can definitely mourn what I wanted to have or what I thought,
yeah.
you know, or just kind of like the idealistic view.
Yeah, what you see other people have.
Yeah, totally. I know that for a lot of, you know, my girlfriends that having a period is whatever. You have it every month, it sucks, you know, it's not great, but I know that it's not debilitating like mm-hmm. it is for me. And I should point out, endometriosis is way more than just a period, a bad period.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
that is...
And I think if you have it or you have symptoms like that,
yes.
you do know, and it sounds familiar, and
yes.
you know that this is not just your regular
for sure.
period.
For sure. And I go back to the period thing because I think that is how most women are diagnosed. But, you know, some of the other symptoms are pelvic pain, GI issues, you know, heavy bleeding, excessive cramping. I have cramps before, during, and after every single month. And that's just part of my life. And I'm grateful for all of the tips and tricks and suggestions. But I think you said it best that it's the unsolicited advice. Or
yeah.
it's the, you know, well, if you ate better, you'd feel better. If you lost weight, you'd feel better. If you did
water.
This. Yeah.
Exercise.
Yeah.
Anything and everything. Or, you know, well, have you tried this? And I think unless you ask for it, and I think there's always a time and place, right? Like
yeah.
Claire and I were just talking before this, you know, about maybe or about an issue, you know, and side effects and blah, blah, blah. And I did, like, I found myself saying, you know, like, oh, you should try this. You should try that. And I feel like
but I
that was a safe space because
yeah.
we were talking about it. It wasn't
yeah.
just like, oh, let me tell you about
like, a random person.
Like, right. Like, let me fool you about this.
That you were.
It's a little bit mansplaining.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
But there needs to be like a good word, like med-splain. You
don't totally.
Need to med-splain to
that. Med-splaining is great.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because essentially, I already have a degree. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is nothing new for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I feel like when you have a chronic illness, we all have like a master's degree. And
yeah.
it's a club that you don't want to be in. It's a master's degree and, you know, a chronic illness that you don't wish you earned.
Yeah.
But if you don't advocate for yourself, no one else will. And I just go back to that. And your comfort level determines what you try. Like, I can confidently say I've tried everything. I'm sure there's something that I haven't, but I feel good at the amount of effort that I've put into trying to manage my disease. And while I am, you know, I'm always open to feeling better, obviously, but I also have come to a place of acceptance and peace where this might be the way it is. And I think people's instinct is to say, you know, no, like, don't give up. But I'm not giving up. I am coming to terms with it. Yeah. I've come to terms that this is the cards that I've been dealt. I have the power of how to, you know, live my life in this situation. I've tried a lot of things, and it is what it is. And I know some people, like, hate that phrase. But that's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, what can, it is kind of, you know, what can you do? It's ever evolving. There are, you know, your symptoms change constantly, and you're constantly trying to find something new that works for that particular symptom. And
yes.
I mean, it just feels like your world is constantly
changing. Feels like you're, like, treading water, running totally. In one place.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's a pretty common analogy where it's like a duck in the water. And, you know, you see the duck above the water. He's super calm, like, swimming along. And then underneath, his little legs are just, like, rapidly going.
Yeah.
And he's doing that to stay afloat. But, you know, from everyone else's vision, it looks like he's just sitting there floating along.
Yeah.
And I have another analogy for chronic illness that I think about sometimes. And it's, for me, chronic illness is like dumping a truck of glitter in your house. And you can vacuum it.
I wish it was glitter. But I get
you
what you're saying.
You can vacuum it. You can sweep it. You can, you know, wipe it away. There's always going to be glitter in your house.
Yeah.
And you might think it's gone. You know, you've like put, you know, the vacuum and you've gotten rid of it, and maybe you don't see it anymore and you feel some relief. But one day you're going to wake up and you're going to find a pile in the corner, or you're going to find a speck on your forehead, and there's always going to be glitter. And you can move out of that house, and in your packed up clothes and boxes and stuff, you're going to take glitter and it's going to follow you.
Yeah.
And that is how I feel with chronic illness. Like, no matter what, it's going to follow you, and it's how you deal with it. Like, are you going to get annoyed with the glitter, or are you just going to be like, geez, like, here's another piece of glitter. Like,
yeah.
What the hell?
Here we go again. Great. Yeah.
But that's how it feels to me. Like, it really is a part of your life, and I try not to let it define me, but it is a huge part of how I operate and why I am the way I am. And I think that it is hard if you don't have that personal experience to relate. I know for me, I feel like a broken record. You know, it's like there's always something wrong.
Oh, yeah, I feel the same way. And it feels like you're constantly negative, but
yeah.
It's hard to stay, I think, it's so hard to stay positive when everything is hurting and it's always a struggle, and you are trying to just keep your head above water always.
And I think it's important for people to realize that complaining and stating facts are different. Like, for us with chronic illness, when you say how you feel, I'm not necessarily complaining.
I'm
literally just
how you feel.
Expressing myself, and it probably sounds negative. Like, it feels like shit. It is negative.
Yeah.
But
you're
I am
only
just
giving
telling
a tip
you
of the iceberg. Of
yeah. And that's another thing. That's a great point, too, is I feel like sometimes I won't mention it for a while, and friends will be like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, are you doing better? I haven't heard you, like, say anything. And it's like, no, I have a chronic illness. Like,
this is forever.
Chronic is forever.
Unfortunately.
It's never going to get better. And, you know, I haven't talked about it, but I just feel like a broken record. Sometimes it's embarrassing. And I know, you know, it's like, oh, you shouldn't be embarrassed. But I'm over it sometimes. I'm overhearing myself talk about it. And so I can't imagine, you know, how it feels like for others to hear it.
And I think, too, because it's constant on the mind, I sometimes find myself thinking about it as if I've said it. And so I don't say anything because I feel like I've said it because it's always consuming, yeah. when, especially when you're in the middle of a flare yeah. and things are really not going well. Those are yeah. the times that you definitely, I think, you know, feel like you're saying it and talking a lot about it, but you're not.
Yeah.
And
it's just that it's all
it happens all the time. Yeah, I completely agree. And
you never get a break from it.
Yeah, exactly. It's its own full-time job.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people have great intentions when they say, you know, I hope you feel better soon. Well, I'm not going to. And then that sounds negative.
Nice sentiment.
Yeah. Thank you. Like, I hear you. I appreciate you. But I'm not going to. And then it's like, well, that you just sound like a bitch if you say that. Yeah.
I don't want you to feel disappointed.
You're such an asshole for saying it's never going away.
Yeah, but I mean, by definition, like, this is it. And so that can be hard, too. But I think for people wondering how to support it, because, you know, I don't think there's necessarily a right and wrong way. I can only speak again from my own personal experience, but just supporting someone is really great. You know, being there, showing up. If you read the signs, you can see, like, do they need some space? Do they, you know, need a friend to come over? Do they need, you know, dinner? Do they need, like, what do they need and what can you actually do? I think people, again, good sentiment. They'll say, you know, let me know if I can help you or let me know what you need. I'm not going to tell you what I need yeah. because I feel like I'm putting you out.
If I'm honest with you, you will be hearing from me every 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Exactly, exactly.
Can you wrap me up, swaddle me, and cradle me like a baby yeah. and feed me? And I need a lot of things.
Yeah. And so I think my advice, unsolicited for someone saying, you know, how can I better support a friend with chronic illness, is just show up and just be a friend, listen, don't ever make them feel worse about it. Trust me, no one can feel worse about me than me, and no one yeah. can ever feel, you know, more guilty about me than me. So,
and I think that is, for me in particular, I totally feel that, like, the guilt is yes. so hard and overwhelming, and it's also not warranted because right. you didn't do this to no. yourself, but it's there always. You're mm-hmm. always feeling guilty for yeah. something that you have no control over.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. And so I think just listening with, like, an open mind, an open heart, having empathy and not sympathy. I don't want sympathy. That doesn't make me feel better. But instead of saying, you know, let me know what I can do, just do something. Pick up the phone, FaceTime, just check on them, you know, ask how they're feeling. And if you're going to ask how they're feeling, be okay, you know, that it might not be good, and yeah. be open to listening to that.
And a simple, I'm so sorry, you're yes, dealing with this.
Exactly.
Is great.
Yeah. I mean, can't imagine really, what you're going through. Yeah. You know, I'm so sorry. That's all. It's,
believe I'm always me, here.
I wish I would feel better soon, too. I wish, you know, that I could find a better way to manage my disease. But I feel like I've explored so many options. And, mm-hmm. again, like, what I revert to, and I don't really know if it's right or wrong, but what I revert to is just accepting and feeling at peace the way that things are. I spent so much time trying to fix it, trying to untangle, you know, what my body had done to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I still get disappointed, or I know I still get disappointed in my body and sometimes in how I react to my body. But for me, I function better just being okay with the way that things are. And again, I don't like it. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I wish things were different, but I just can't
change it.
I can't change it, and I can't live, you know, worrying what if, or, you know, what if things were different, what if I didn't have this, because for me that's just not productive. Yeah. And yeah. that's how I get out of bed every day. It's just, this is what it is, and, you know, you really get one life, and it is what you make of it, and it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, that alone is a whole health journey. Just
yeah
being able to accept your diagnosis
for sure
is really hard to do.
Being able to accept it, and being able to accept that you probably can't fix it. That yeah. you're always going to have it. It might get worse. It might get better. But you're always going to have it. And I think just learning to navigate your body, your feelings about your body. You know, I do put a lot of pressure on myself, feeling like I failed as a female, you know, trying to date. It's like, oh my God, I don't know if I can have kids. It's not really something you mention on a first date.
That's a lot of pressure.
That is something that is like so huge, is finding somebody that truly understands what you're not truly understands, but is accepting of it and understands the task at hand. I mean, we talk about that a lot, about being in relationships, and I don't think people realize how much it is and how consuming it is and how altered that life is.
Yes.
And finding the right fit and the right person that is dedicated forever to be accepting of that is nearly fucking impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as hard as it is for you to accept yourself, you're now asking someone else to accept your illness and the way that you are, and to accept you as is. You know, you are kind of, I don't want to say you're from the discount bin, but like, you came, you know, I know, that doesn't sound very nice.
No, but I can relate to that.
But like, that's how I feel. Like, yes. I'm kind of like the, you know, like, like comes as is, you know, gentle, you know, sold crack on the side or something.
You don't get any more off.
And, you know, I think when you accept that and you make sure that you take the time to find the right person, I'm sure it's great. I am single. I don't have that support of a partner. It sounds great, but it also sounds really scary that I have to...
It feels impossible to find.
Yeah, and that I have to, like, open up this part of myself to someone and hope that they accept it and that they're okay with it.
Right.
Or not open up and then, you know, connect in another way, and then later down the road you're like, oh.
So sorry about that. I actually...
Yeah, it's really intimidating.
It is, and it feels very...
risky, I think.
Risky.
For sure.
Yeah, and very, I don't know, like, revealing. I don't...
Yeah.
Like,
vulnerable. It's very vulnerable. Yeah. It's very vulnerable, and... I'm sure, you know, my person is out there, but for the time being, it's me, myself, and I, and I'm in a good place as far as my disease goes, and I hope that other people are encouraged to hear that, you know, even if you're never going to get better, you can eventually be at peace too, and I think that's really important, because sometimes it does not feel like that. It feels like it's just this never-ending journey of unknown.
Yeah. But you're right, the acceptance, I mean, I felt a change in myself in, you know, as Maddie put it, coming out, and that's been, it's given me, like, more strength, but I still have not, I'm, like, 3-4 years in, and I still have not, there's no radical acceptance yet.
Yeah,
I'm and that's still okay. Trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's hard. It's really hard.
And I think until I truly felt that, I didn't even know that was an option. Like, that was never a goal of mine, was to accept it. My goal was to feel better. My goal was to beat this. My goal was to, you know, fight this and find something that I would be like, finally, this is better. But I think until you truly inside feel accepting, it's not going to happen. And it's not something that you can force. So I think that's important to remember too. Like, everyone's timeline is different. And 3 to 4 years in, I was not accepting. I was mad. I was mad that I felt like the opportunity to be a mom was potentially taken from me. I was mad that my body was messed up, and, you know, I felt... like, I was just dealt this, like, reject, you know, uterus, and I was mad about it and sad about it.
It's a very, like, capital WTF.
For sure.
This is my life.
Yeah.
And I think I'm probably revert more often to, like, being mad, because it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that. But I like the radical acceptance idea, actually. I really like that.
Yeah.
Because nothing is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's evolving, but it's not going away.
Yeah.
So you do have to get to a point where you say, this is it.
And this is me. And I think accepting it also doesn't close you off to still finding something that maybe works for you, right? Like, if some miracle came along and they were like, you know, take this pill, you're going to feel better. Like, I would do it.
Magic pill.
Yeah. I don't think accepting it means, like, giving up on trying to feel better. It just means that you are okay. Well, you're not okay, but the way that things are,
you're okay with not being okay.
Yeah. And you're able that's to huge continue too.
And live your life to its yeah. fullest potential beside, like, with the diagnosis that you
totally.
Have.
Totally. And it is okay to not be okay. And it is okay to not feel good all the time. You know, we as chronic illness, I don't want to say survivors, that sounds dramatic
warriors.
Too. But
warriors.
Warriors, I guess.
Or battle buddies.
Yes. Ashley Rippentrop, that okay. is a producer director, she said, we all need battle buddies. And okay. I was like, oh, we need that. We yeah. need t-shirts. Like, can we get like a hat or a wristband or a flag? And like, we can recognize each other walking around with the regular people.
Yeah. I think too that dealing with a chronic illness and COVID has its own special set of what the fuck circumstances. For me, having a chronic illness has always been super isolating. It's been super lonely. For me, I don't want to talk about my uterus. Like, it's not really dinner conversation.
Yeah.
It can be very, you know, isolating.
You feel like you're like bringing the mood down. Like,
yeah.
And so you like don't want to say anything.
Part of your body, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't. It's not like an icebreaker conversation.
Yeah.
Like,
so my vagina.
Let me tell you about
lately.
My periods. But all the things that keep me going, which is, you know, keeping busy with work, seeing my friends, seeing my family, being able to try to limit my stress. All of those things were taken away from me and everyone else during COVID, and those are my coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
So now I'm stuck at home. I feel like shit.
You're left
I'm out
no
of my
defense.
Routine. Yeah, and thought I was isolated, you know, and lonely before, and now I'm at home, you know.
Literally alone.
Literally at home alone and dealing with this. So I think I realized how important it is to have a support system, and I think I almost took it for granted pre-COVID of yeah. how important it is to, like, maintain those friendships, see your friends, see your family, do fun things, and just try to make the most of your life, because once those things are taken away, all you have time to do is just, like, let your mind run. And, you know, I would just think about how I felt terrible. And I didn't have anything to distract me from it. I think mental struggles are very relevant as well. I think for me, my journey now is trying to take care of my mental health because I can't get a grip on my physical health. And so I'm always just trying to think of ways, like, what can I control? What can I regulate? And for me, it's like not going crazy during COVID and
yeah.
just with chronic illness in general. And I think, you know, there's a lot of stigma around therapy and antidepressants and all of these mental health issues. And, you know, just like it's normal to have a period, it's normal to have mental health struggles.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for those of us with chronic illness or those of us who have someone with chronic illness in their life to really take care of the whole self. And that includes, yeah. you know, mind, body, spirit. And
yeah, exactly.
I think that's really important and something that I didn't realize until I was stuck at home for COVID of how important that is and how big of a piece that is, because pain is also really tied to psychology and your brain.
It's kind of like they work together, you know.
Totally.
If you're not mentally in a good space, it can be so destructive on your body and vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, I totally. Think about it, like, when I'm super anxious, I'll definitely yeah. have, like, gastro issues.
Oh, and, for like, sure. For
my
sure.
My stomach hurts if I'm super anxious.
Stress is when I have the worst flare-ups. I can just, like, feel my body being like, nope.
Yeah.
It's not working right now. And until I get rid of the stress, I will have those flare-ups and I will feel bad. And
like, you have to start at the top of your body and work totally. The way down.
And I never,
like,
really thought about
treat
that.
Every single part.
Definitely. I was evaluated by a pain clinic and they were like, you know, you're going to do this, like, psychiatric evaluation.
Right.
I'm like, well, I don't need that. Like, I'm fine. It's my, you know, it's my ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
And he was explaining, and I probably won't say this in the correct medical terms, but basically because I've had chronic pain for so long, my brain doesn't really know how to feel normal or how to function without pain. Totally. My brain only knows how to function with pain. And so we were working on ways with medication and, you know, therapy or whatever it is to get your brain to be able to realize, like, it's okay to function without pain. It's okay to operate pain-free. And my doctor was basically, this particular doctor was saying, basically, you don't have a chance to not feel pain if that's all your brain knows. So it's like we're conditioned with these chronic illnesses to operate from a place of pain. And so that was something new for me, where I feel like I've done so much research and tried so many things, but I had never tried to correct my brain. Like, that was just a very foreign concept to me. But again, you have to advocate for yourself. You have to trust your gut. You have to go to multiple doctors. If you don't like the answer, you keep going.
And how did that work for you? Because that's interesting to me.
So I was prescribed an antidepressant that was supposed to block the pain.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the idea was that your brain would kind of calm down and stop, like, rapid firing from pain, and you'd be able to just sort of calm your body down. It didn't work for me.
Same, girl. Same.
It gave me crazy muscle spasms.
I had insane nightmares. I felt terrible. It was not for me.
I totally agree. I was on all different strengths. I felt dead inside, and I still had pain.
Literally. My family was like, why? There's no emotion here. You're like, literally, like, flatline emotion. And it was so bizarre.
I felt nothing, but I felt my pain. Yeah. I was like, this is not.
Yeah.
This is not working.
I'm not even getting joy now, and I still hurt.
Yeah.
The exact opposite.
And that's the thing. Like, if I would have felt dead inside and been pain-free, I probably would have stuck with it.
Yeah, you might have been like, fine. Okay.
Like, what that felt like. But I'm like, this is not working. This is not. It's not helping me. Now I have no emotions. I can't cope with my pain because I'm just dead.
Yeah,
inside.
Yeah.
I couldn't sleep. It was not a good trial and error for me. But again,
you tried
it. You know, check that off the list. I've done some crazy things. I've tried medication. I've tried acupuncture. I was put into medically induced menopause. So,
what's that like?
It was terrible.
Is that reversible?
It was, I did injections.
Okay, so we can do that, but we still have to diagnose.
Still have to
open you up. That is insane.
I had monthly injections, and I was in my 20s, and I was sitting in, you know, meetings with 50, 60-year-old women who were fanning themselves with hot flashes, and I was doing the same thing. It was a bizarre experience.
That's crazy. Yeah. I've never heard of that.
It was really rough. I would not be able to personally recommend it, but again, like, it helps for a lot of people, you know, you never know. But I had all the menopause symptoms, and I was in an extreme amount of pain. And the idea is that if you're not producing estrogen, that your endometriosis will sort of dry up and not be able to have these lesions and growths become inflamed and swell and bleed and do all, you know, the gross things that they do in your body, which is what causes the pain. But again, for me, it didn't work. I don't eat meat because when I first was diagnosed, they said, you know, maybe it's like the hormones in meat are kind of feeding the endometriosis. And at the time, you know, hormone-free chicken breast from Whole Foods was like, you know, $10. And I was in college. Like, that just wasn't realistic for me. So I'm like, no problem, I won't eat meat. And that didn't work. I still don't eat meat, but it's not because, you know, I'm trying to save I'm not trying to save the animals. I just... If that, for me, that's a simple thing where if it helps remotely, fine. You know, I've lost weight, I've gained weight, I've done everything, every kind of birth control. I remember being very young and, you know, the doctor saying, you know, you should try birth control. And my mom being like, oh my God. I'm like, no, mom, it's for that endometriosis. I think I've really been open, but there comes a point where it's like, okay, this is not working.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of my acceptance journey too. So maybe for, you know, for you, Jessica, if you go at it a few more years and nothing's happening, I think that kind of helps with your acceptance journey too. Is like you feel good about everything that you've tried. You feel,
yeah,
you know,
you've
like
you've been productive. Every...
Totally. Yeah. And I think that was definitely a big part of coming to terms with it. But yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Just to feel like you aren't alone and that you can connect to someone.
Yeah.
Again, shitty thing to connect on, but it still is felt really good.
And it's a community.
Yeah. But I still go back to, it's really nice to not have the focus be on fixing it and just to be sharing. And I think that's a unique space that you guys are creating.
So anything where
online community
where you found a lot of like helpful information. I mean, it sounds like you've really ticked off a lot of the, like, you've marked, checked off all of the things that you could possibly try. I mean, obviously there's so many things, but you've done so much. I wonder, do you ever look for specific websites or anything that help you?
So I look on social media. There's a lot of Instagram pages. Comment sections are always the most helpful.
Yeah, totally.
To just kind of go through.
Sometimes we'll just do a little following.
Yeah. I do a lot of Googling when I have a new symptom, a different symptom, a symptom at a different time than I usually do. I'm always looking for different doctors to try. I'll just like Google search like endometriosis and just see like, is there a new study? Is there a new... you know, like a hot thing. I once attended, it was like an endometriosis event, which I was really excited about, but I will say I didn't love it. There was something about being in this space where everyone is suffering from this disease. I thought it would feel comforting and it made me really sad. And I think for some people that might be comforting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of women there who were really impacted by it in a positive way. I couldn't wait to get the hell out. I have to get out of here. I hate this. It made me feel, I don't know, it just made me, it was not comforting to me. But again, like, I'm always down to try. I'm always open to feeling better. And I think you have to keep that mindset too.
Yeah.
You know, Eastern medicine, Western medicine, basically whatever you can get your hands on, I recommend. You know, whatever works for you, whatever makes you feel good, even if it doesn't work, but if it makes you feel better for having tried it or for having come across it or looking it up, at the end of the day, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried TENS machine?
I have a TENS. You yes. I have a personal TENS. I mean, I should have made a list. if someone told me, you know, go outside, sit, you know, stand on your head for 10 minutes, you'll feel better. Like, I would, you know, you'll see me outside in a headstand. but I'm always open, but I'm also cautious of, you know, being disappointed by yet another thing that didn't work.
Right.
And I think that's just kind of the pragmatic side about me, too, is like I'm very, you know, I'm very logical and I know that not everything is going to work, but I know myself in that I don't want to be constantly disappointed either.
Right.
But again, that took a lot of years to get to that point. So my hope is that more people can even know that that's an option to eventually find peace with your disease, because I didn't know that for a really long time until I actually felt that.
And oh, I think I'm going to be really googling comforting. Radical acceptance for sure after this. I'm going to like, tell me all about this. I love it.
Okay, so it's when you stop fighting reality and accept things the way they are without resistance. You're accepting reality by letting things go. Let go of bitterness that may be keeping you trapped in a cycle of suffering. And radical acceptance doesn't mean you like or approve of something. It simply means you accept it, making it easier to break a cycle contributing to emotional struggles. That was just like for you.
Yeah, that's like, looks like I'm not going to be able to go down that path. No. I mean, I'm going to look into that for sure because it's really, I mean, it's really intriguing. I like that. But it I'm sure it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it sounds and for sure. Like a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean this, like, for me personally, it's like freaking flipped me off my axle. Just
I can't imagine what it feels like to know something different.
Yeah.
Like that seems way scarier to me because I don't know what I'm missing. I don't know what it would be like without all these problems. It seems way scarier and way more intimidating to me if I know what is, quote unquote normal. Yeah. But like, this is my normal. So mine is more of how to manage, you know, the shitty cards dealt versus I don't ever have the pull to try to get back to what it was.
Right.
So I could see where that would be very frustrating.
Yeah. It's, and it's not wanting to get back. I think it's, you know, like crying about like, this is my life now. Mm-hmm. And I know what my life
mourning
was.
That loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have kids, right?
Two.
So I worry about if I am able to have a baby, I truly worry about having a daughter and having her live this hell. I think about that all the time.
Claire does. Claire,
I do too.
I think about, you know, I wanted to be a mom for so long, and maybe this is nature's way of preventing someone else from being in this personal hell that I experience
every
day.
Do they have genetic testing right now yet?
Not that I know of for endometriosis, no. Okay. Because the only way is
because it's a woman's disease sometimes, I feel like.
And
so why would we care? And that's kind of how I feel a lot. And even with us, it's like for POTS in particular, it's 80% women.
Mm-hmm.
And for Epstein-Barr virus, the original name for that was Mad Woman Syndrome. It's like, if it has to do with a woman, then nobody gives a shit.
I truly believe if men could have endometriosis, that there would be
a cure,
clinical testing, there would be a cure, there would be governmental research. I think if men had their periods, we would have a lot more science.
Free period products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. I think so, even if you don't have a chronic illness, being a woman is really hard. And sure, there's some perks, but for the most part, it's very difficult. But I think we get the short end of the stick on a lot of things that people don't consider. And then when you're a woman with a disease that only women can get, it just adds on top of that.
Our fast facts for you.
Okay.
Which fictional character would you want to meet?
Oh, wow.
Well, I know mine.
Okay, tell me.
Currently, I would love to meet the Duke from the Bridgertons.
The Bridgerton.
Okay, I haven't seen that. I was like, tell me about the
girl,
Duke.
You need to watch it. Oh, my gosh.
Really
Okay.
Yeah. So hot.
Okay. I guess if I had to choose a fictional character that I would like to meet, it would be my future husband. It's very much fictional right now.
I love that. That was great. That's great. Okay. Do you have a useless talent?
I'm pretty good at Googling.
Okay.
Pretty good at finding out information.
That's a little useful.
It that's true. It benefits you, for sure.
Super useful? Man, I'd have to think about that one. What's the next one?
Okay, guilty pleasure.
Okay. These are so hard. Oh my gosh. Okay, my guilty pleasure is probably Amazon Prime and just like having everything.
Oh, it's everything's free.
Everything you could ever want, like delivered to your door.
I mean, and it that in particular it for feels someone with a chronic illness that, especially during this time,
I'd be laying in bed.
It's amazing.
Like, I've been searching all week, like deep in the caverns of the Google, looking for the cheapest yet best pregnancy pillow because I feel like it would really enhance my life.
I'll send you a link.
I was like,
I sleep with one too.
I like looked at Target and I was like the ratings aren't very good on these, but the like good ratings are really expensive. I'm like, I don't want to pay $200 for a pillow. But
yeah, sleep is invaluable though. I think it is. Especially with a chronic illness. Like being well rested just gives you like the foundation of
I think those are the things, like there are certain things like that. It's if you qualify, your doctor should be able to prescribe you
it's
that.
Like a medical device, basically.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
anyways. Yes,
I agree.
All right. Well, it's been absolutely amazing. We're so excited that you made the trip to come and chat with us. Fun. We really appreciate it.
I really want to thank you guys for what you're doing. I think it's invaluable to anyone with a chronic illness, anyone who knows someone with a chronic illness. And if you think you don't know someone with a chronic illness, you do. And that's why it's so hard, is because a lot of these are invisible. And to create a space and a place where people feel comfortable and seen and heard and can connect, is it's really invaluable. So from all of us, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.